day of January 2020 in the Lucy Coleman studio in Los Angeles, California, from the United States of America on God's good, great planet Earth. Welcome to my webcast. This is PJ, your internet pastor. I'm feeling very, very diplomatic today about life. I'm just going through it. Just want to let you know that within a week or two, my sound will be up. I'll have the big mic back up and other things. I'm just looking at my finances, making sure that I'm living in wisdom, doing everything rightly. Good progress. You know, I make progress with young black men. I do. Good progress. I got up and I've been feeling better lately since the open heart surgery in March of 2018. And I can't believe that it's been that long already, but it has indeed been that long. And I'm feeling so much better, so much better. I was having a discussion with two young men last night. There was going to be a third one, but he called and said that he couldn't make it by. But that's all right. We had such a lively discussion, and I brought up something like this. I said, what if you were able to go back and to talk with your parents the night before they copulated with each other and created you? Would you tell them to do that, or would you tell them to refrain? Now, you may say, John, what made you have a thought like that? I mean, just imagining that if your life had taken a different journey, a different way, and that's what I was trying to get them to come to face to face with. What if, you know, it's like a fork in the road? That's what our lives are like. And if we had taken one direction as opposed to the other directions, what would have become of our lives? Well, I like to read from where I'll be coming from today. Back in the book of Proverbs, I'm going to stay here. I'm not in a hurry to get out of it. As I kind of like take these words of wisdom, Proverbs chapter 9, if you want to follow along with me. For those of you that are not familiar with me and my methodology, that is me on my website. That picture was taken a number of years ago. When I wore my hair bald, I'm now growing my natural out as full as I possibly can. I haven't had a haircut since March, as a matter of fact, March of 2018. I haven't had a haircut. I do my own hair. I don't cut it off. I'm letting it grow out. I got to put more plant food on it, let my hair grow more, but that's me. I look about the same, a little drawn, a little frayed, but thank God I'm coming back, getting my energy back. And before I get into the study, let me say this. I've come to the point where this website that I'm on, mine, is my forum. I don't need to speak wisdom. You know, I've been trying to share some of my wisdom with certain men, but a lot of men don't want to hear my wisdom because I have God pegged in it. All right, you know what? I was thinking about this. If a bunch of Al-Qaeda people captured me and told me to deny Christianity and to affirm God, I said, well, I've always affirmed God. And if they said, well, tell us that there's no God but God, I said, there is no God but God. I know that. What is his name? I don't know what his name is. You tell me what his name is. But I affirm that one God. And I think that because that one God made of one blood all the people that dwell on the planet. We were having that discussion long in our discussion last night. All of us are from the same species, human beings. And we would live together in peace and love without war and hatred and bloodshed and nuclear threats and things like that if we learned how to aggressively love one another. Proverbs chapter 9 starts off, wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out her seven pillars. She has prepared her food. She has mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her maidens. She calls from the tops of the heights of the city. Whosoever is naive, let him turn and hear. To him who lacks understanding, she says, come, eat of my food and drink of the wine that I have mixed. Forsake your folly and live and proceed in the way of understanding. As we begin this study, we're drawn into the picture that the preacher has drawn here for us in Proverbs 9, 1 through 6. And we're going to investigate these verses to see what they mean and to see how these verses applies to where we are. We note the imagery that we shall find in the whole of this chapter. We're going to see for the first time in this book, if you study Proverbs, how the preacher builds his arguments with comparative contrast statements, comparative analysis. Well, if you do this, you get that. Well, if you turn this way, you get that way. That's what I've been saying for the past couple of days. As a matter of fact, for this entire year since we've been on, that if we do our life in a particular way, that it will have certain rewards for us. And so we're going to look at this imagery that we find in this chapter. We're going to also see for the first time in this book in chapter 9 how the writer builds his argument with comparative contrast statements. We're going to see the guilt factor sets up in the heart of the reader if these proverbs are not adhered to. In other words, as you look at these absolute statements that we're confronted with, we're going to see that how you may be drawn to the fact of feeling guilty because you don't live up to the standards. So, what is this house that wisdom builds? Well, first of all, we see here wisdom's invitation in verses 1 through 6. In verse 1a, the speaker begins by stating that the house is already built. Now, this is good because in my conversations last night that I had with the young men, we were having a conversation concerning what wisdom is and how wisdom has been, okay? And what this wisdom is all about. How was a house built? It's already there. It's already in place. The prospect of knowing the right and contending with the right and the wrong is already there. You don't have to recreate the wheel. Most of us know right from wrong. Most of us would choose the right if we want to get along peaceably. I like that old Bible verse that says, as much as lieth within you, live peaceably with all men. That's what I've been trying to share with young African-American males for years here, especially since my wife has passed away. How do we get along with each other without going to war? Why is it that we have this tendency to do that? Wisdom has built her house. She's already established. Thus, we see wisdom as the host inviting a guest into her quarters. This is a vigorous invitation in passive form because it says, has built her house. Now in verse 1b, look what it says. She has hewn out her seven pillars. Isn't that wonderful? There is no special significance of the seven pillars in particular here. Pillars were used in large houses during this time. If you look at the White House in the United States of America, where President Trump lives, where President Obama lived, those strong pillars that's holding up the front porch of the house. Look at that. Wisdom has built her house. She's strong. She's fortified. She's standing there. Yes, my goodness. Many think that the reference has to do with completion or perfection. But I want you to note how wisdom boasts in her wealth. Could this be significant? And it could be, because look at chapter 8, verses 18 through 21. Look what it says. It says, riches and honor are with me. This is wisdom speaking. Enduring wealth and righteousness. Man, when you come to wisdom, look at all that it gives you. My fruit is better than gold, even pure gold. And my yield than choicest silver. Look at verse 20. I walk in the way of righteousness in the midst of the paths of justice. Man, this is wonderful. Verse 21. To endue those or to endow those who love me with wealth. In other words, if you love wisdom, you can become rich through her, that I may fill their, man, look at this, treasures. Wisdom wants to fill those treasures. It is at this point to say that wisdom presides in a house that reflects her status. And this is what wisdom does. Wisdom is that house already built. She is sustained by her own advantage. This is what makes it so in particularly beautiful to look at. Now let's look at verse 2. Verse 2 says, she has prepared her food. She has mixed her wine. She has also set her table. We're talking about wisdom as a person here. Wisdom as a guide. Wisdom as an objective. Wisdom as a way for you to live. Don't make mistakes. I was telling one of my boys, I said, son, you're putting too much effort in this yourself. You have to ease up and let God work in your life. And man, he's come to realize that it's done. In verse 2, we see that the animals have been slaughtered and the wine has been prepared. And what does this demonstrate? This demonstrates, and verse 2 is really beautiful, of Proverbs chapter 9. It demonstrates that this meal that wisdom prepares was indeed important. The slaughtered beast, as compared to the sacrificed, pertains to this feast not being one inclined to religion, but to enjoyment. In other words, this isn't a sacrifice to be burnt on the altar. This is a feast set before you to fill you, to give you sustenance. Verse 2b, because it says she has also set her table. This presents the idea that the preparations went beyond an average mean. This is more than just a McDonald's burger and a Coke. No, this is a feast that has been set for us. Look at verse 3. She has set out, she has sent out her maidens. She calls from the top of the heights of the city. This imagery, man, the sending out of the maidens were the final stage of the preparation of the feast. I think I said that a few days ago on my webcast. It says Jesus saying, tell them to come to the wedding feast that I prepared for them. That is a way that wisdom screams out. When I see young black men killing each other, hating each other, rapping against each other, talking about the success of each other, I don't understand these rappers killing each other, talking about each other. We need each other. We need to look deeply into the face of each other and love what wisdom has provided. Man, if I could do like I did years ago when I traveled around the country and taught the Bible and looked into the faces of brothers and sisters that I loved and that I deeply felt something for, instead of seeing the hypocrisy and the anger of it all. Man, can we see the parallel of Jesus in the wedding feast? Ah, yes, we can. So we see the extension of the invitation. This is beyond the sound of one's voice. It is a public invitation. It is in a prominent part of the city. And you can see that as you look back at Proverbs chapter 8, verse 1. Does not wisdom call and understanding lift up her voice? In other words, you see it there. So you got to see the contrast of wisdom's call as opposed to folly's call, to our foolishness calling. You got to bring your people your family, your friends into this. Now, we note the particular truisms found in the invitation itself, and you see that in verses 4 through verse 6. Look at it. Whoever is naive, let him turn in here. Oh, there's a lot of naive people. I was teaching a young man yesterday. I was cleaning my bathroom. I got up and I said, oh, I smell piss on the toilet bowl. And I said, oh, no, we can't have this. And I'm sure that when people visit my bathroom, they smelt it. And so I just changed clothes. I put on some sweatpants, pair of sandals, and a couple of t-shirts to keep my upper chest warm. Got me a bucket of hot water, some Comet cleanser, some spray cleaner, some sponges, some rags. Got down on my hands and knees and started scrubbing the bathroom floor, scrubbing inside the shower, outside, all the walls, because my walls are white in my bathroom, the toilet. I threw out the plunger and everything. I'm going to get a new toilet plunger. The other one was there. It was smelling. And I cleaned it up. And a young man came through and he said, what are you doing? I said, what you should be doing. I'm doing what you should be doing. I said, one of these days, I'll probably need a caregiver because I won't be able to get around as much as I'm getting around. I said, but I'm on my hands and knees. I told him, I said, I've been cleaning this house since 1974 when I moved in here. I had to stop this webcast because a guy came to my door. Look, yesterday, a guy came to my door. And he said, I said, I don't need anything done in my house. I don't have any money to spend on it. And I don't need that. And so he said, well, can I send a guy by here? I said, yeah, send him by. The guy came by and he said, do you need anything done? I said, I told the guy yesterday I didn't need anything done. He's the one that asked me for my name and address. If I need a roof, my roof's not leaking. I don't need to tear all these roofs off. Everything is good. And the guy kind of got an attitude, be gone. I didn't tell you to come by here. He told you to come by here. But you see, wisdom is denoted. Why would you get something? He said, well, don't you need any new windows? I see these people putting new windows on their home. These windows are fine for me. I'm going to die with these windows up here. I'm not putting new windows up as long as they can shed. If I get cold, I put another blanket on me. I don't be turning on no heater. I didn't turn on no heater today. I don't dare do that. You see, wisdom lets you know what you can do and what you cannot do. Wisdom always delivers like that. And so I just want you to know that. Now, the particular truisms found in verses 4 through 6. If you're a person that lacks the heart to do something, know this, turn in here. In other words, if you're naive, turn in this place. If you don't know what to do. The young man, I was cleaning my bathroom. And he said, what are you doing? I says, I'm cleaning this. And so I said, close the bathroom door. And he closed it. And I said, do you see all that dust? Because the inside of my bathroom door is painted white. And the outside of it is tan. I have to repaint the outside. But I said, the inside is white. Clean that. He didn't know how to use a cleaner spray and the rag. I said, I want that door. And when he cleaned it, I said, do you see what has to happen? This is what every door in the house should look like and in both sides of the door. And I said, and if you ever want to be a caretaker of mine when I get older, I expect my doors to be clean like this. I said, you are not a caregiver. A caregiver knows how to clean and is willing to clean for the money because, you know, seniors can have people come into their home designated as caregivers. These are persons that can cook for me, that can make sure that I'm getting my exercise and stuff like that. And the state or something will pay for it. Well, I'm just not going to have somebody collecting money, caring for me, and you don't even know how to clean the wall. See what I mean? And so if you're naive, come in here because I teach you how to clean a wall. In other words, leave that which you are chasing after and learn something new from wisdom's classroom of instruction. That's the way I train a young black man. That's the way they deal with me. You see, they have to realize that I'm talking about advancement. I'm talking about the call makes the assumption that one hearing it needs to make a decision. You need to turn in here. You need to find something to do. Oh, I love this. Whosoever is naive, let him turn in here. To him who lacks understanding, man, look at this. And that young man didn't know how to clean a door. He cleaned that door, and then I said, now look at my walls. Look around the sink. You see these marks on the sink where somebody brushed their teeth and some toothpaste splattered on the mirror? Clean that. I want it clean like... And the young man said, man, you like a woman trying to... No! I said, why do you think I live so long? I can't live in filth. Man, these young people, they live out of duffel bags. They don't know how to fold up clothes. I have to, you know, share with these young men, when you wash clothes, you fold up certain clothes and put certain clothes in a certain place. But let's keep moving. Let's keep moving. Look at verse 5. Looking at the meal and the significance of the meal. Look at verse 5a. Come, eat of my food. Look at that. Look at that. Look at that. Looking at the food provides a staple for spiritual life. Wisdom is saying, look at what I can give you for the rest of your life. I've been living this life. If we continue with this food, look here, the food and the drink from wisdom satisfies. See, look. Look at the difference here. I want you to check out the difference between the contrast of my as to what folly offers. Stay in chapter 9 and look at verses 13 and 14. It says, the woman of folly is boisterous. She is naive and knows nothing. And look at verse 14. And she sits at the doorway of her house on a seat by the high places of the city. This is a woman of folly. And he compares this street woman with the right kind of woman that a man would look for, or the right kind of partner that a person would look for, as opposed to some scandalous individual. Okay? So wisdom's table satisfies. I like that. Wisdom's table satisfies. That's one of the things that I try to teach these youngsters. And I'm dealing with a young man. He's 22 right now. And I'm telling you, when I was 22, I was in the midst of my Army career. I got drafted at 21. When I was 22, I was halfway through my Army career, just being sent overseas. And I remember me. I remember what I was thinking, what I was doing. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was talking with a couple of guys last night, and I told them I had thoughts and memories of an incident that I was participating in, and it was as clear as, I recall. I told them that I recall looking at my mother and father having a conversation, sitting in the living room in the Quonset Hut apartment, and my goodness, I don't know these people, so I'm going to cut this off. I don't know why these people are calling me like this. I'll just let them leave a message, really, and if it's important, I'll get back with them. But I had vivid memories of the conversation between my father and my mother, and I retain that look in my mother's face as she laughed at my father as he was making this statement. And I think they were in their 30s. They were in their 30s, and I was just a young lad. I recall it. Oh my goodness, do I remember that? And so I retain that wisdom. Let's look at verse 6. Verse 6. Verse 6 says, "Forsake folly and live, and proceed in the way of understanding." Now, wisdom says that we are to leave gullibility behind by learning wisdom. See, a lot of people get in trouble because they're gullible. Because they are gullible. They are gullible to the things that are happening around them. They listen to their friends. They listen to their friends. Their friends try to tell them, "Oh, this is the way life is. This is what you ought to be doing." And they become gullible. No, leave gullibility behind you and learn of wisdom's way. Folly in verse 6 denotes immaturity, youthfulness, youthfulness of spirit. What this verse is saying is grow up. Those of you that are parents, you need to tell your. I recalled a friend of mine from the Carolinas called me and he said, "Oh, PJ, my boys seem like they're just getting worse and worse and worse." No, they're growing up. You haven't given them the option of wisdom over the folly. Tell them, all right, you want to experiment with that? You know what I heard that in Illinois, they just legalized the marijuana. I smoke medical marijuana. I smoke sativa. Some of you may not agree with that, but it's good for my mind. No, I haven't smoked any today. I don't require it. I don't have to smoke every day. But I don't know why that medical marijuana does, but it goes right, and I highly recommend it for a lot of you seniors out there that are having problems concentrating. Sativa, man, you can get an oil form. You don't have to smoke it because that makes you cough, messes with your lung. But if you get some of that PSC or ABC or whatever it is and have that stuff come in there, it will help you. And it will help you not to be a foolish person. So, folly denotes immaturity, youthfulness of spirit. And it says, grow up, stop eating junk food and eat from the right place. Eat from wisdom's table. Sit in the right seat, not in the seat of scoffers and fools and ignoramuses. Don't be like the naive ones out there. You know, I was told by a friend of mine, he came by to visit me and he said, "Oh man, I went to a funeral yesterday." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "A young lad down the street, a couple of houses from me, died." I said, "What did he die of?" "A heart attack." I said, "What are you talking about, a heart attack? How old was he?" 26. I said, "Hold up. 26-year-olds don't die of a heart attack. They haven't lived long enough to have cholesterol build up in their arteries. What are you talking about? A 26-year-old black man, full of melanin, beautiful black body, organs strong." A medical doctor told me, he says, "You black people are something because you got strong genes, strong skin, and vital." I know what I'm talking about. I said, "What did this guy die of?" "He died of an overdose of opioids." "Opioids? What? What do you mean?" "He was with his friend in the car and they were smoking some, they were in a cloud and he took a hit and the thing got him so high that he died." The boy was right across the street from a hospital when his friend was having a heart attack, and instead of him taking him to the hospital, he drove the boy back home to his mom and daddy's house. By the time he got him there, the boy was dead. 26 years old. My friend said that he went to the funeral and his wife was crying and they all crying. He said, "What you crying for? You left wisdom's table." Look, if you got children, you need to tell them, look, don't mess with that stuff unless you, because you only get one life. One life. I tell the young men that come around me, and a lot of people don't understand. Why do you have these young men hanging around you? First of all, they don't have fathers. They don't have fathers. Because if they had fathers and the fathers had any damn sense, their boys wouldn't be in the streets like they are. They would be right there with their daddy. Like I was right there with mine. I understood the relationship between a young man and his father. I looked at my father and learned how to dress. I looked at my father and learned how to keep my body clean, how to shave. I see some of these young men in the bathroom and they spend hours in the bathroom trying to beautify themselves. They miss the point. It's not about being beautiful. It's about grooming yourself like a man should. See, eat at wisdom's table. Stop eating junk food. Eat at the right place. Take the right seat. Don't be like the naive ones. And look at verse 6b. And proceed in the way of understanding. What a great admonition. Proceed in the way of understanding. In other words, that means note the reward of wisdom on what it promises. It promises you life. Leave, forsake the negative, proceed, walk in the positive. That's all that means. Let me run that by you again. Leave, that means forsake negative behavior, negative language, negative dispositions, negative thought patterns. Proceed, walk positive. We were talking last night, three grown men talking, all different ages, talking about life. And I asked the question, where do you get your life? What is it? What is the spirit by which you live your life? All right. What is the spirit by which you live your life? What is the spirit by which you do your life? Leave the negative, forsake it, and proceed, walk, run, or sprint towards the positive, and your life will be better. Now, you know what? I wasn't going to go any further, but I got to go on because we've got to evaluate and then look at the consequences of living wisdom. So may I continue just 32 minutes and 8 seconds into this webcast? I'm enjoying myself so much, and I'm enjoying speaking with you, looking out the window of the Lucy Coleman studio and loving what I see. Cumulus clouds up in the sky and shining all bright. And I just feel marvelous. And God is good to me. So let's do this. Because now the speaker in verses 7 through 12 does what he does the best by providing for us search out and find mentality. I like this. A search out and find mentality as he brings it home to each of us. I love this. I love this. I love this. That's why I love the book. The book is so wonderful because the book brings us down. Now, let me read the verses to you, and then I'll come back, because some of you may be on the bus, on the train. You may be flying to another city listening to me. You may be leaving one province, coming into another, and you're about to lose your internet connection. So let me read it to you, just as if you're reading it out of the book of books yourself, so that you can get a clear picture of what I'm saying. He who corrects a scoffer gets dishonor for himself, and he who reproves a wicked man gets insults for himself. Do not reprove a scoffer, lest he hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase his learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me your ways will be multiplied. Oh, I can't wait to get there. And years of life will be added to you. We spoke about that a couple of days ago, right? If you are wise, you are wise for yourself. And if you scoff, you alone will bear it. Now, these are evaluation and consequences. Now, what the speaker does, he does what he does best by providing for us a search out and find mentality. And then he brings it home to each of us even if these verses seem to be misplaced or out of order, we see the teaching doing the following. He carries us into a sneak preview of chapters 10 through 29. And that's why when you read this beautiful poetic language and you really understand what Proverbs is all about, then you can fully understand the way these beautiful chapters come together. And it would be good for you to read chapters 10 through 29. That's a whole bunch of stuff. But this section, chapters 10 through 29, is called Poems and Prologue. Okay, but we're going to start, and we're going to be jumping all around here. And I want you to follow. What's going on in these verses? Well, they are a carefully composed section of a larger poem, linking the descriptions and the invitations of wisdom and folly and focusing on the fundamental theme of the book. Okay, now the fundamental theme of the book is found in chapter 9, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. We understand that. And you can see that same evaluation in chapter 1 and verse 7, which says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So we see that. We see what they're doing. Now, verse 7 and 8, back in Proverbs chapter 9. Go there with me. If you're traveling on the train and you have a Bible in your phone, look it up in your phone. All right, or download a Bible program in your phone so you can follow what I'm saying. All right, now let's go back to Proverbs chapter 9, and we are at verses 7, 8, and 9. We're going to try to come on down to that. I'm enjoying this little talk with you today. I am having a ball, and I'm so glad that you were able to come to the website. For those of you, and listen, I wanna say to a friend of mine, Kenny, if you're listening, wonderful. The only reason that I will not stop my Facebook Messenger and things like that, because it's easy for people to communicate with me, because a lot of people want to know, well, let me see if John is still alive. What is John doing? If you go to my Facebook page, you'll see me putting pictures up in the past, and I have a few in the present, but I like, you know, my past life, showing folk, hey, I'm alive, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, but I'm still living in wisdom. That's the whole point. See, if you can go to my Facebook, then you can come to my website. You can come to my webpage. You can listen to these webcasts. I thank God for this. I thank God for my server that allows me to put these things up like that without jeopardizing what I'm saying, without trying to command what I should put on my God, I'm so glad that I live in a country where I can still talk about God in a positive way and don't have to ask for money, don't have to ask you to agree with me. Evaluation and consequences. Let's look at this, because we see now the scoffer slash the wicked slash the scoffer in verses 7 and 8a. Okay, we shall note the careful balance of the writer as he carries us through these truths. The first three lines describe the response of the wicked to correction. It describes the response of the wicked man when he's corrected. I recall when I speak with young men and I'm correcting them, and the first thing they do, a lot of these young men start arguing back with me like a woman. And the first thing that I tell them, I say, you're feminized. Because don't come back at me sounding like a woman. Now, I'm trying to correct you with wisdom, and you coming back at me arguing like you arguing with your mama. But mama this, and you think this, and you think that, and you think, I don't think nothing. I'm not even talking about that. I'm not even going that way. You're full of folly. Now watch this, watch this, watch this. They will curse and hate any who dare reprove them. People that are foolish, they will hate you when you try to correct these young men. Now you can't tell them anything because they don't have fathers, so they don't have that patriarchal nature. And the matriarchal, you know what? God told me that he went to that 26-year-old guy's funeral. And he said that the preacher was a woman. I said, no wonder everybody was crying. I would have told him, shut the hell up. What you crying for? What are you telling your sons? Why aren't you spending time with your boys? Why aren't you hugging them rascals? What the hell are the rascals doing out there taking opioids? Beautiful young black man taking that mess. Riding around the car with his head in the cloud. Having heart attacks and dying on the spot. See, they will curse and hate who dares approve them or disapprove them or reproves them. This is a direct contrast with the reaction of the wise. You see, we see the wise and the righteous in verse 8b and verse 9. See, because in verse 8a it says, do not reprove a scoffer, lest he hate you. In other words, when you try to reprove somebody that's doing wrong, they're going to cuss you out. Tell me this book don't know what it's talking about. Look at verse 8b. Reprove a wise man and he will love you. In other words, when you correct a dude that is following God and wants the truth, he will love you because he will start living wisdom's lifespan within where he is and what he is doing at the time that he's doing it. You see what's happening here? This is beautiful. This is beautiful when you see this. Now, look. A person's response to the content of the book reveals the state of the person's heart. This response leads naturally into if that person really fears the Lord. In other words, if this person really fears the Lord God, because I hear everybody in our community talking about, I know God is on my side. Oh, no, baby. No, he's not. God is not on your side if you drove that man from the home because you think you can get more money from the state or for the county. Oh, no, God's not on your side because you got that man to give you them three babies. Because every time you had a baby, you putting him on the dole, and then you got that man marginalized. I had a man tell me the other day, he said, PJ, you were right. I said, what? My brother called and told me that after he divorced his wife and got with another woman, he got with her, and she made him so mad that he started tearing up his own stuff in his house. Not her stuff, but his stuff. She made him so mad. She called the police on him. The police arrested him, and he had to bail himself out of jail with his own money. And I said, see how a black woman would tear a black man down? And this is happening in the year 2020 right in front of me. Don't live the life of a foolish person getting with a foolish woman that's going to jeopardize your life. And a lot of people ask me, John, how come you haven't gotten with a partner since Lucy died? What the hell are you talking about? I'm not going to lose my house. Like this, a white man come by my house today. And I said, your employee came by here. He's the one that took down my address. I didn't tell him to bring you here. I told him I didn't want nothing. And I told him when you got here, I was going to tell you I don't want nothing. But he was insisting because he's trying to make a commission to stay alive. I said, if I need anything, I know how to get on my computer. And I said, why do you think that we senior citizens? I said, I'm 75, but I'm not retarded. What's the matter with you? The white man backed off of my porch with an expression on his face. And I almost said, get the hell off my property. But I don't want him to come back and put a brick through my window. See, because you see, when you're wise and you're wise and you're righteous, the person's response to the content of the book reveals the state of the heart. This response leads naturally if that person fears God. The fear of God leads to wisdom, which gives life. See, that's all these verses are telling you. Look what it says. Look what it says in verse 9. Give instruction to the wise man, and he will be still wiser. Because if you give instruction to him, he's going to be wiser after you give him that more instruction. Teach a right. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase his learning. Look at that. You can tell I'm excited about teaching the word of God, can't you? Because I get carried away. If I was preaching this behind the pulpit, boy, you talking about having a ball. Oh, you just don't know. Let me continue to go. Verses 10 and 11. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me, your ways will be multiplied, and years will be added to you. You know, I love these verses because these verses continue. It is as if the preacher is seeing something that I haven't seen, and I need to pay more attention. Now, when we look at verses 10 and 11, these verses calls the reader to identify with what the writer is really saying. Is not obedience the only response? We should not expect a person that is in rebellion against right and humanity and decency to respond in obedience, would we? No, we wouldn't. Because when you look at this verse, or these verses here, verses 10 and 11, it gives you the breakdown that before you can get a life of wisdom lived out, you got to get an understanding. And see, when I had a daddy and I was a kid and I didn't get it right, daddy would unbuckle his strap. And he said, now, John Jr., your mother was ill, and I understand that you were making noise, you and Ross. And I said, oh, Daddy, I didn't mean, yeah, I meant it. I'm lying. I did mean that. You see, there's a difference. There's a difference. Now, look at verse 11. Verse 11 also teaches us some very, very important wisdom. For by me your days will be multiplied, and years of life will be added to you. Now, this is obvious, okay, because we saw verses 7 through 10. It is now magnified by and morally pointed out that there is a choice between wisdom and folly, because as you look at verse 12, if you are wise, you are wise for yourself. And if you scoff, you alone will bear it. See, in other words, you wise unto yourself and you a fool unto yourself. You can't blame nobody on your foolishness. It magnifies the moral point. There is a choice between wisdom and folly. And when you look at verse 12, and this is just so beautiful, because when you look at verse 12, and let me read it again. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself. And if you scoff, you alone will bear it. In other words, this all lays on you. It's up to you. Here we see a strong statement of personal responsibility. See, a lot of people want to blame other people. You can't blame nobody for this. This is on you. I have a sister scripture in the New Testament that I had marked in my notes, Galatians chapter 6, verse 4 in the New Testament. Look what it says. It says, but let each one examine his own work, and then he will have reason for boasting in regard to himself alone, and not in regard to another. See, I never, oh man, wait a minute. Look at verse 5. For each one shall bear his own load. You see, each man, if you're a fool, you're going to bear that. I was asking last night when I was having that discussion with these men, where do you really think we're going to end up once we, you know, once our life is over? Where are we going? What is it? And so they said, well, don't you believe? I said, I don't know where I'm headed. You know, I don't believe the evangelical thing of heaven, streets paved with gold and all that. I don't know where my spirit is going, but I do know one thing, that this thing of wisdom and righteousness and living right and fair towards man is heavy upon my heart these days. And the older I get, it is heavier. And the better I feel inside, man, it's like somebody flipped a switch in John Coleman. 2020, man, my vision is strictly clear. I see clearer than I've ever seen before, people. Real clear. And this does not mean, this Galatians 6 and 4, this does not mean that our personal choices do not affect us, rather that we will give an account for them, okay, on our own. See, we know this to be true if we have been following God in any way. I like 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10. It's always been a very special verse of mine. It says, but we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may be recompensed. That's a great word, and I love it in the New American Standard Bible. Recompense means the payback. We will be given the payback for his deeds in the body, according to what he has done, whether good or bad. Now, this is evil done. I have to make sure that I'm not, man, when I, you know what? I'm going to tell you the truth. It was once a young man that I knew, and he had a long way to go, and I was lying down taking a nap, and I was woken up by the man who had fell on top of me, not body to body, but on top of my upper body. And he just hugged me, and I hugged him back. We didn't say anything to each other, and I hugged him back. And it was as if he was saying, let me know you love me, pops. Hold me. And I held him, and all I could say to him is, it's going to be all right, boy. It's going to be all right. And I get emotional like that because this man needed a hug. And too many of you out there got people around you like that, and they need to be hugged, man. They need to be encouraged, and we won't do it. All we think, oh, come on, man, have a drink with me. Oh, do this. No, hug them. Hug them. A man came to me. He got him a little job. This attorney wanted him to work for him, and the attorney knows the man has a degree. And the attorney said, come by my office and help me file some things, and I'll give you some money. Help me out. And the man came and he said, man, I don't have a dress shirt. I went right to my closet and got a dress shirt freshly pressed and ironed by me, because when I have nothing to do, I iron me some clothes. And he says, I got to go to an attorney's office. So I said, put this on. And he went. I said, let me have it when you come back through. And he said, I don't know very many people that would give me a shirt out of their closet. Man, look at here. You will be recompensed for what you do. See, that's what that verse means. I don't take 2 Corinthians 5 and 10 lightly. Now, what is our intention as we come back to Proverbs chapter 9? What is our intention? Because we are comparing wisdom with folly. We're in Proverbs chapter 9, verse 13. The woman of folly is boisterous. She is naive and knows nothing. Ah, I love this. I love this. I love this. Boisterous. You know, when you look at some of these web clips that they have out here, a lot of the African American women in my community, and white women now, and Hispanic women, women in particular in America, are boisterous, so bustling as to allow no time for repentance. That's what that means. Here we see the woman of folly here. This is an ignorant and undisciplined person. You can see them in chapter 7, verse 11. Let me see if I can find that. She is boisterous and rebellious. Her feet do not remain at home. You know, these women that's in the streets. I remember once my wife went off somewhere and she was gone a long while. She went out with some of the ladies from the office and I knew where she was, but it was 2:30 in the morning. She wasn't home yet. I called her and the other women laughed and said, "Oh, John is calling for Lucy." And I told Lucy when she came to the phone, "Baby, I'm your husband. I'm concerned about you as a human being. You can stay there all night and come back in 3 days if you want to. I'm concerned about your welfare. I'm not trying to direct you. Do what you want to do." That's the kind of married man I was. I didn't try to make anybody do anything. But she was a woman of folly doing that. She listened to those women, and I let her know that she was out of line. A woman of folly. Now, this is an ignorant, undisciplined person. The irony is that she desires to teach others. Can you see that? Go back to 9 and 13. The woman of folly is boisterous. She is naive and knows nothing. But what's she trying to teach other people for? That doesn't mean anything. Look at verses 14 through 16, and we note that folly or confusion stays at the door of her house, but she has something to offer to those that are inclined to be enticed by her vanity. Look at verses 14 through 16. And she sits at the doorway of her house. What is she doing? On the seat of the high places of the city. That means she's in high positions. And you know, a lot of black women are in high positions these days, aren't they? Calling to those who pass by, who are making their paths straight. See what this woman is doing? Now let's look at this. We note the folly or the confusion stays at the door of the house. She has something to offer for those that are inclined to be enticed by her vanity. Here is a person that is cloaked with blanketed darkness. All right? Those who are under the spell of this person are just as foolish. You see, you have to understand that when this person has tricked you, they have tricked you greatly. Now, I have a sister scripture that helps me out with that because I need a hermeneutical context here. See, you've got to do hermeneutics now to be wise in this situation. 1 Corinthians chapter 2. Verse 14. Oh, people, don't get it twisted. PJ, your internet pastor, may not have a pulpit to preach behind, but as long as I got a computer that works and a brain that is in function with God and a moral aptitude about my spirit and my mind, you need to listen to this dude. Listen to this scripture that I'm going to quote to you. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 14 says, "But the natural man does not accept the things of the Spirit of God." See what I'm talking about? "For they are foolishness to him. And he," that is that natural man, the foolish man, the man of folly, "cannot understand them because they are spiritually appraised." In other words, you bankrupt it. See, either you got wisdom or you got folly. There's only two. You can't be both of them at the same time. You are only one of those. Oh my God, now you don't believe me yet, do you? I know you don't. And as a matter of fact, I know you don't. Go to Matthew chapter 6, verse 23. Let's look at the words of Jesus. Matthew chapter 6, verse 23 says, "But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? In other words, Jesus said, wait a minute, the light in you is dark, then you dark. Everything about you is dark. These kinds of people, even call themselves to be the elect. They are ignorant and naive and unlearned. They are quick to listen and consider that what they think of the hearing is good when that hearing is bad. So therefore, you have to ask, what is it that is so delightful about folly? Why? Why would you follow this kind of folly? Now, when you look at verses 17 and 18, because we're going to finish this chapter and then I'm going to let you go because we're over an hour now. Now look what it says. Let me quote verse 16 again of chapter 9. Whosoever is naive, let him turn in here. See, wisdom is begging. Wisdom is saying, come on, man. I got something for you. Turn in at the gate. And to him who lacks understanding, she says, that is, wisdom says, stolen water is sweet. Verse 17. Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol. Now we're going to look at this, because now we see folly showing her seductive skill by displaying secret enjoyment by offering the candy box of delights that will take your life. I'm telling you, this book of Proverbs will open your eyes. That's why I say when people don't want to hear me, you know what? There's a men's group. I love all those men in that group. I love all those brothers. Huh. I just give them my website when I go there. Hey, man, here's my website. Listen to me. Tap into this and listen to johnecoleman.org, because these other lightweight, flyweight preachers don't know anything, are not going to help you at all. Verse 17, let me define it for you. Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. That which is forbidden is what the preacher is talking about here. To taste what is not yours to taste is delightful to one's mind. That would be like that school teacher that they arrested, that big fat black woman school teacher, for seducing some teenage boy in middle school and having sex with him. They need to lock her up. See, taking that which is forbidden. In other words, when you see mess like that, they have accomplished what is not theirs in the first place. See, wisdom lets you know that you can't do that. Verse 17b. Look at 17b, and this is good, because it says stolen water is sweet. Then it says the bread eaten in secret is pleasant. 17b shows us that the power of what is not right lies in its pleasure. See, the power of that which is forbidden lies in the pleasure that it presents to you. That boy didn't know when he smoked that opioid smoke funnel that it would give him a massive heart attack when it went to his brain and into his heart. If stolen water and bread were not sweet or pleasant, why would one even steal it? You see what I'm talking about? Why would you even go that way? Now look at verse 18. Verse 18. But he does not know that the dead are there. See, that 26-year-old boy didn't know that he was going to be dead when he took that hit. And he says that her guests are in the depths of Sheol. Now, this is beautiful. Look where folly ends up. If the person that is wicked in his mind and in his heart knew that he or she was already dead, they might wake up and run towards that which would give them wisdom. That's my role. That's what I do. That's what this website is for. That is why I do these things. when I do them, because I'm trying to do it in a way and so that you, the listener, would gain something from it. And I said, hang with me. I'm almost done. I know it's been a little over, man, an hour and 4 minutes. Are you kidding me? One must answer the question as to, can we cause the person that is in folly to wake from their sleep? Well, the reason why people cannot see where they are is obvious. Now, I'm going to show you and I'm going to share with you a group of text that will help you understand why people in the condition they're in cannot see why they're in this condition. I'm going to go to 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. And I'm going to give it to you the way it's in the Word of God. Now, you may say, I don't believe in Pauline scriptures. You know, I don't know who wrote that. It has nothing to do with me. Forget you, John. You don't know what you're talking about. You crazy old man. That's what's the matter with you preachers. You just trying to scare me. I've already read the other verses. If you paid attention to this study thus far, you're in one or the other category. Now, I want to take you through these, and then I want you to pay attention as I take you through them. Look what it says. Therefore, since we have this ministry, that we've received mercy, we do not lose heart, but we have renounced the things hidden. In other words, if you want to live a life of wisdom, man, give up those things. Man, don't be trying to sneak out with somebody that ain't your woman. I mean, I know a man now. He's crippled because he was creeping on his woman. And that man told me not too long ago, I don't creep no more like that. I said, well, hell, I'm sorry you had to learn the hard way. Because of shame, not walking in craftiness or adulterating the word of God, but by manifestation of the commending of ourselves to every man's conscience in the sight of God. In other words, I'm trying to get you consciously to think about what I'm saying and so that you can bring yourself on wisdom's track and eat from her table. And even if our good news is veiled, it is veiled to those that are perishing, in whose eyes the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelieving, that they might not see the light of the truth that's coming in the image of God. Now, that's one verse. Another one is 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 4 and 5. I won't read all these things because I'm out of town. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 4 and 5. And my message, Paul says, and my preaching were not in persuasive words of wisdom, but in demonstration by the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not rest on the wisdom of men, but on the power of God. And so this wisdom that I'm talking about is a God-given wisdom and not a John-given wisdom. You understand what I'm saying? It's not that. Yet, each of us have a responsibility. Go to Romans, and then I'll let this be the last text. Go to Romans chapter 10, verses 1 through 12, just mark that down. You can read those verses on your own when you get a chance. And this is a biblical text, beautiful text, because we see the aspect that we must address the question of our role in the beginning of this and the recognition of what it means to accept the fact that you are highly involved in this message that I am taking you through right now. I have, oh man, I'm looking at my outlines here and there's just too much and I can't do it all. As a matter of fact, I'm going to have to stop right here because I do want to come back and finish that. Thank you for joining me for another study today in Proverbs. And I hope that you've gained something from this. Share this with your family and friends. Yeah, share it with them. There may come a time when someone you know may greatly need this kind of information in their lives, especially since our churches are not teaching us anything about God anymore. God only knows what these preachers are doing. I know exactly what I'm doing when I present it to you, and I'm grateful to God that I can do it. Hey, God bless you.